Did you know that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day? But don't take my word for it. Actually, you should take my word for it. And here's what you need to do. You need to go to ZipRecruiter.com/Zach. That's www.ZipRecruiter.com/Zach to learn more there about recruiting the best people for your business. The fastest, best people fast. You know that fast, good, cheap pyramid? Well, this is doing it all. This is fast, good, and yeah, you got to check out the pricing online. That's kind of above my pay grade, but ZipRecruiter, check it out. Too many ads. Here we go. Episode 71, Jennifer Turner. Really fun episode here, actually. A little bit of a different view into Nashville than we normally take, which is a great thing because, you know, we switch it up a little bit here on the Zach Kuhn Show. Jennifer Turner, though, let me give you a little background. She is the CEO of the Tennessee Performing Arts Center, otherwise known as TPAC. And, you know, they recently announced their 21 through 22 season, which includes shows like Lion King, The Prom, Band's Visit. It won the Tony for Best Musical. What the Constitution Means to Me, which is an amazing play. Oklahoma, like, you know, the first musical ever. This is going to be an incredible season here at TPAC. And we really get the scoop from Jennifer. We talk about what does it take to run the Performing Arts Center. Have you always wanted to know? We're gonna dive into it here. We talk about ticket pricing. How do ticket prices get set at the Tennessee Performing Arts Center? We talk about everything. We go in and out and back in again. This was really great. I'm a big theater fan. I love TPAC. And talking with Jennifer and getting her insight was really interesting, really great, actually. So here we go, episode 71, Jennifer Turner. Let's dive in. You know, I had Ken Davenport on this podcast a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about getting people back into the routine of going to the theater, that it was such a part of people's lives, and now how do you convince people that that's where they should be spending their Friday night or their Saturday night? And now that we're starting to put tickets back on sale and announce shows and launch the new season, is that something that you're thinking about? How do we remind people to come to TPAC, to come to the theater? How do we get them in the habit of coming to our shows again?
Yes, definitely. I think that actually has been a strategy, like, all through COVID, is just to remind people that we're here, we're doing these other things while we can't be together in person, but we want to remind you that we're here so that, you know, you'll want to come back. And I would say that it's been a pretty successful strategy because people seem very excited. You know, all of our social posts, they're excited to come back. They can't wait to be back and see live performance again. And we're excited too. I mean, we miss, you know, many of us have worked in the theater for years and years and years, and this isn't normal. I mean, for us, you know, we're used to having sort of this buzz of activity all the time and, you know, being in the house and seeing the curtain go up and that sort of that moment before everything happens. So I'm hopeful that, you know, people will continue to want to come back. It seems that that's the reaction. You know, I think there is going to be some hesitancy. You know, people have gotten in used to a certain routine during COVID, and it's going to be hard for people to sort of get back into the swing of things. But, you know, we have a long sort of period where we're going to be easing back into performance. And I'm hoping that by when fall comes around, people are going to be really ready to get back in.
How do you do that? What does that mean? How do you ease back into a performance? Does that mean with the COVID restrictions, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So we announced a couple of weeks ago, we announced our cabaret series and with Studio 10. And those are small capacity performances. So those people who don't feel, you know, like they want to sit shoulder to shoulder in a theater, but they're still sort of missing that live performance element. This is the series, I think, for you. We're doing one a month, and we wanted to do something a little unique. So we put them all on stage. So the artist and the performer is going to be on stage, and we're trying to create intimacy through social distancing, which I know sounds kind of strange, but we're trying to make sort of a more intimate performance space than having that large sort of gulf between audience and artist through a stage. but still do it responsibly and safely. So we're excited about those. There was a great response to them, and people, you know, bought tickets right away. And now that some of the capacity restrictions are easing, we're hopefully going to be able to release more seats.
I think Adam Pascal's doing one, right? Like, the lineup's amazing for it, of what's coming up. Do you, because I also, you know, I had David Kells on this podcast a couple of weeks ago who manages Bridgestone, and he was talking about how he like talks with every arena across the country, especially about COVID. He's got this like group of arenas and they all talk and they brainstorm and they figure out what they're doing. Do you talk with other performing arts centers? Like, is there a group text with all you guys to sort of strategize and come up with ideas? Like, what's the community look like?
I do. And I also talk to David.
Oh my goodness.
I have a ton of groups. I've got a performing arts center group. And let me tell you, Zach, at the beginning of COVID and in the early days, we were meeting weekly. So just imagine sort of all of these groups. So I have a performing arts center group, and that's performing arts centers around the country in Canada. We've got our Broadway groups, and these are all people that present Broadway in different ways, shape, and form. I've got a Tennessee theaters group. So all of the theaters in Tennessee.
Is TPAC the big dog Tennessee group? Is there anyone bigger than TPAC? I know you might be a little biased to say so, but I'm sure there's good theater in Memphis. There's actually a great playhouse in Memphis.
The Orpheum in Memphis is right. Fantastic. They have a Broadway season similar to TPAC's. You know, of course I'm biased and you should come to Nashville, but you could go to Memphis. And then the Bijou, the Tennessee Theater, so Knoxville, Chattanooga, the Tivoli.
That's right, the Bijou is a great theater, actually.
Great. And that was another thing for me. I'm new to Nashville. I came here in May of 2019. So this has been wonderful for me, like through the crisis, to get to know some of my colleagues, and everybody's been wonderful. Like, we all trade ideas and stuff. And then we had like a Nashville group, which David actually started this Nashville group. And these were more like venues. So we've got like the arenas, we've got the theaters, we've got convention centers, sports teams. So there's just a wonderful community. If you need advice, there's no shortage of advice. But it's been great because this has been new for everybody. That's the one unique thing about, you know, the pandemic, is that we're all going through the very same thing at the very same time with no playbook whatsoever. So having the communities, you know, to be a part of and to bounce ideas off of, or just even, you know, to talk when things are, you know, when things are hard, it's been really nice.
How do you, because, you know, I think it's Nashville is like an amazing place to develop a show, and it's starting to happen a little bit. Like, the May We All musical is coming here to develop. And normally, typically people, you know, shows are developed in like Boston, Philadelphia, closer to New York, closer to Broadway. But to me, Nashville seems like a perfect hotspot to develop a show. You've got amazing talent. You have an amazing community that would embrace the show. Is that something you've thought about since you've started somewhat recently? Especially if you look at, when shows have been happening in Nashville. You've only been working for like 6 months in a time period of when shows have been happening in Nashville, right? Like, have you thought about this at all? Like, could Nashville become a hotspot for developing Broadway theater?
Definitely. Yes. I've given this a lot of thought, and I do think that we are a market that is ripe for some of these pre-Broadway runs. You know, there's just so much here. And another thing too, we have just such a great support community for the music industry, and there's no reason we can't expand that to include the arts and music and performance and theater. I mean, there already is, you know, not to, you know, there's a great community here, but to even build it and give it that infrastructure that is such a asset to the music community here, I think would be really amazing. So yes, May We All is a collaboration we were working on pre-pandemic But it just, I think coming out of the pandemic, it gave us a chance to really think about what we want for the future. And we're doing strategic planning and focusing on some ideas. And I'm really interested in that sort of path for TPAC. And I'm also interested, you know, we're tapping into the tourism sector because TPAC is really, you know, traditionally the residents have taken advantage of the great shows coming into TPAC, but you know, there's no reason that, you know, you can't, you know, go on a party bus during the day and come to TPAC at night. Or maybe I should flip that a little bit, maybe come to TPAC for a matinee and then do the party bus at night. I mean, there's no reason you can't have a little theater with your honky tonk. So
how do you think, you get tourists to do that? Because I think when people come to Nashville, they think they want to do the Country Hall of Fame, the Opry and the honky tonks. How do you get TPAC into their minds?
Well, you know, we have a great partnership with the Convention and Visitors Bureau. I mean, they're fantastic to work with. And I think it's just really building our brand and more visibility and having longer runs of shows so that we can sort of capture a larger swath of that tourism market. That's why we're so excited about maybe all sitting down for a while, because it's going to give more opportunity to look at the tourism market, because we're going to have the availability over several weeks versus, you know, if you're not coming to Nashville the week that Mean Girls is there, you miss out on Mean Girls.
Right.
Although I do think Mean Girls is a great show for our bachelorette community.
I think it is too. Yes. Everybody should be coming to that. And also if the show is there longer, you can have potentially have people who come and see it and then tell their friends who are going to be coming next week or whatever.
Exactly. Word of mouth, great marketing tool, but you can't take advantage of word of mouth unless you have a little bit of time for that to spread.
You said in a Broadway World interview, I think one of your goals was to expand the community or to bring more community to TPAC. Is that something that you've been able to start working on during the pandemic? How have you thought about achieving that?
Absolutely. Well, you know, TPAC is a wonderful place and space to see performances. But another, you know, aspect of our organization is we serve the community through arts. So we have programs from age 3 to adults in how you can interact with the arts to build confidence, build awareness of the arts, you know, use it for things like public speaking or, you know, just gaining, you know, these great skills that you can apply. You know, you don't have to be an artist to use the arts to sort of improve your skills. So we have all these wonderful programs and I'm looking for opportunities that really resonate with our community. Like, how can we use the arts as our superpower to, you know, to do things in our community? So that is one area that I think we are really taking a strong focus at. And the other is through, you know, diversity, inclusion, and equity. Is I don't think that you can be what you can't see. So, you know, for me as a woman coming up in this industry, I look to other women as leaders and mentors, you know, as I, you know, built my career, but I think that is true of artists as well. Like, we have to have representation, not only on our stages and in our shows, but in our audience and our staff, on our board. So I think for us, you know, serving our community is understanding our community and really providing programs and programming, so shows, but also other avenues to sort of interact with us that really, you know, show how the arts can change a community and really benefit and be that essential driver of not only economic vitality, but just, you know, all the great warm and fuzzy things you get from the arts.
Have you interacted with anyone? Like, I was having lunch with someone last week who was like a big kind of burly country music manager, very like, you know, country music, for lack of a better term. And we somehow got into the subject of theater, and he ends up being a massive theater fan, which was kind of surprising to me. And he was like very knowledgeable about theater, and we had this whole conversation about theater. Have you found like some people that you like in Nashville that you wouldn't expect to be mass? Because you came from California prior to this, you know, have you found people in the country music industry that you just wouldn't expect to be massive theater fans, and then all of a sudden they turn out to be huge theater fans?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. You find theater fans everywhere. I mean, when I came to Nashville and I heard that Eddie George was on our board, you know, as a new board member, I'm like, oh, that's great. You know, that's nice. But then I realized he's on our board because he loves theater. He loves it and he performs. And I had no idea. So, you know, you just never know. You never know like what people are interested in. But yeah, we found a lot of country artists that are huge TPAC fans and either follow us on social media or come to shows. And it's great. And you have that kind of community too, where it's not a big deal to have a huge country star come to the theater and see a show. You know, this is their home and we are their home performing arts center. So it's not unusual to us, but we just, you know, we appreciate it. We love it.
Is it kind of funny? Because I feel like everyone in the concert industry is used to getting comp tickets and free tickets. And it doesn't really work like that, at least on Broadway. Like there's really no such thing as a comp. Someone's paying it for it somewhere. And maybe you get a hookup and you get a house seat, but they're really comp tickets are pretty rare. But do people expect that in Nashville? And then do you have to be like, we don't really do comp tickets or not really?
Yeah, not really. I think it's more so, as you've said, like house seats are always a big, you know, they're a big deal. Like if you have a connection, you know, the ability to buy a house seat is a very nice hookup. I can tell you that. But you know where we really, this was tough for us because, you know, a lot of times we have inventory, we have 8 shows and we have a 2,400 seat theater. So, you know, we have households and usually we have inventory, even though we don't do a lot of comps, but Hamilton, wow, that was crazy. But I went through Hamilton in another market, so I was kind of prepared for it. And, you know, when we started getting close to it, I told our team, I said, okay, you're going to start to get the requests. All the people that you think, you know, would have thought about getting their tickets in advance, they will have forgotten to get their tickets in advance. And it's going to be hard because we don't have any inventory. So, we did so much communication, like to our board and our subscribers, like make sure you get your tickets early. You know, we're not going to be able to help you at the, you know, at the end. So make sure you get your tickets early.
So how does Hamilton work? Because this was like your first season. You would come in 2019. Mm-hmm. I think Hamilton had already kind of been booked, but you still had to kind of manage it. How do you, like, for example, who sets the ticket prices for Hamilton? Like, this is always curious to me. Like, does TPAC set the ticket prices or does Hamilton say, these are the ticket prices, we can't have lower than this? Like, who sets the ticket prices? First of all, I'm so curious about that.
it's usually a conversation between the presenter, which is TPAC, and the show. And so that is usually discussed. I mean, you want your ticket prices to be, you know, you look at your market. So, you know, I've worked in California and I've worked in Chicago, and there have been some markets where, you know, the pricing is a little higher and sometimes a hotter show is going to drive that a little higher. But you usually have a base ticket price and then you have dynamic pricing. So as long as you can agree, and you usually come to some agreement on your base ticket price, and it's consistent with what is offered in the market, the value of the value of the product and what your market will accept as a ticket price. But then the dynamic pricing is all based on the ability of the market, so the consumer, to drive the prices up. So when there's low inventory, your dynamic pricing drives that up. And it is still a conversation though with the show and the presenter, because you're equal partners for the most part in the show. So you both work to make it successful.
So did you guys really run out of tickets? Like if the mayor of Nashville came to Hamilton, showed up, could we have gotten him in? How tight was it? Were we fully sold out? True. I mean, I guess we were. It was Hamilton.
We were completely sold out. And now you keep a couple, like we got rid of our holds pretty early because there was such demand, but the show always keeps some holds too. So you work with the show and you release some tickets, and that's why even a sold out concert that I would want to go to,
it's never fully.
It's the day of, I always would check, you know, around when the box office opens, That's usually when the artist will start releasing. So, you know, the venue gets pressured to kind of release early. Like, come on, guys, you got to get rid of these holds. But the artist always has the ability to keep onto their tickets for a little longer. So I would imagine in Nashville, like for country artists and stuff, they use up those holds because they've got a lot of friends here and all of that. But there's still the chance. So that's where we had a little bit of extra leeway with Hamilton, is the show would release some tickets close to the performance date, and then people were able to snatch those up.
So what would have been the secret to get your Hamilton ticket? Would it have been to show up day of the show more? Were people doing that? How were people trying to
subscribe,
hack?
Subscribe
to TPAC. Let me ask you this. So I imagine there was a massive boost in subscriptions for Hamilton because with Hamilton for TPAC. Does that translate season to season, or do people kind of see Hamilton and then they peace out, or do they come for Hamilton and then they stay around?
Well, it's always the hope that when you have a great blockbuster that you try to retain as many subscribers, because you think, you know, we gave you a great season and now we want to give you another great season. And so we call them like converts. Like, you convert a lot of single show, like they might've subscribed for Hamilton, but maybe they had such a good time with everything else that they subscribe again. So that retention number is really important. And we announced our 2021 season in late February. So it was a little early for TPAC. We usually announce in April. And I can tell you, Zach, our numbers were looking so good. I had a feeling we were going to meet our Hamilton numbers, and we were just well on the way. But then, unfortunately, COVID hit. And, you know, but from all accounts that I hear this morning, it is a very good day. We have surpassed our first season, or our first day renewal numbers for 2017-18. So we just got to hit those Hamilton numbers, and I have a feeling
might do this after when we finish up. There's some great shows coming. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a great season. The Prom is going to be amazing. Oklahoma, mm-hmm. which my brother was actually a producer on in New York. So I've been following that show since inception, and it's going to be incredible. And I'm excited to see how they do it in a real stage versus in the round. So I think it's going to be an amazing season. So everybody's got to get their season tickets or season passes for TPAC. How do you pick the season? Because do the shows pitch to you, or do you go after the shows and sort of carve out what it is? Is there like a menu sort of? How does this work? Because I've always kind of wondered this also. How does the season come together?
Yeah, so it depends on what's available and what's touring. So there's only, you know, over the years in presenting Broadway, you know, there are some years when we've had a lot of options, and there are some years that it's been kind of slim pickings on the availability of what's touring. So, you know, we're lucky that we've been in a place over the past few years, longer than that, where we've had a lot of options, which has been great. So of course, you know, when we're looking at what we want to take for the season, a lot of it depends on routing and availability, like what is coming through our part of the country at certain times, and does that line up for what we have available? We also love to get Nashville premieres, you know, so we want to get shows that haven't played here as early as we possibly can in the touring cycle. So, you know, as soon as something can come out and we can get it here, you know, that's what we try to aim for as well.
Why do you aim for that? Why do you aim to get something here sooner in their touring cycle? Is that what you mean? That?
Yeah. I mean, if it's a great show, like, we want to have it as soon as we can get it. You know, we want it fresh off Broadway so that our patrons here can enjoy it. Especially if it's a hot show. But we also really try to balance, you know, we think about what plays well in our community. So, you know, Les Mis always does great here. So if we have the opportunity to bring it, you know, we love to bring that.
That's, you know, there's other shows, isn't it?
Yeah, I do love that show. I really do.
And one other, you said, I saw an interview where you said another one, but I'm trying to remember what it was. You said Les Mis. And
I probably said The Sound of Music, because I adore
The Sound of Music. Yeah,
I do.
Okay, wait, but I cut you off. We were saying about choosing the season.
Yes.
you pick the shows that you think Nashville is going to want to see. Les Mis always does very well.
Sure. And yes. Then, we also, you know, we look at two things that, you know, we want to bring award winners here. So, you know, it's really about curating like a season that, you know, has that sort of mix of everything, you know, maybe a little bit of the classics, but some of the new stuff, things that haven't played here before, but then things that are really familiar. So it's really coming up with that mix of options for our patrons so that they get a little bit of everything in the season.
I think this season is doing that incredibly well. I mean, I guess every season tries to do it, but you've got The Lion King, which is going to aim for the kids. You've got Oklahoma, which is the classic musical. The Prom is going to be for the teens and the families, and everybody's going to love it. The Band's Visit is going to push your, you know, your perception of what you think a show can be. What the Constitution Means to Me, I saw is coming, which is just unbelievable thought piece. This is going to be an incredible season, I think. This is why everybody's got to sign up now and get ready for it.
Exactly. Yes. We're excited. And, you know, it was really important to me too, that, you know, we had announced this fantastic season for 2021. So it was really important to me to try to retain as many shows as we could. So some of my colleagues around the country, they weren't able to get, you know, just because of routing or tours not happening or things getting postponed, they weren't able to get everything. So I was just glad we were able to retain as many as we did.
Absolutely. Okay. So how do you get the gig as CEO of TPAC? Because it's been relatively recent, 2019, and you were in California at an amazing performing arts center out there. And then how is there a call out that TPAC's looking for a CEO? Is it back channels? How do you get how do you even interview for this? What does this process even look like?
Well, for most president CEO roles, usually an organization will use an executive search firm. So that's pretty standard. And so there are, you know, people in certain roles, you know, that, you know that they're sort of in that market of, you know, you could go to certain places. So you get called by executive search firms and you say, would you consider this role or would you want to put your hat in for this role? And, you know, there's, you know, there were some that I was approached on that just didn't hold a lot of interest for me, whether it was geographically, it wasn't maybe the right part of the country or just the organization didn't quite fit like my personal, you know, what I thought that I could contribute at a high level. So when I was approached about TPAC, I really looked at the organization and I knew a little bit about it. Because TPAC was one of the first sites to do the Disney Musicals in Schools program.
Right.
So they were the pilot site for Disney. And my organization in California had done Disney Musicals in Schools. And we actually sent a huge group of our team out to learn from TPAC on how to successfully do this program. So I knew, you know, that they were, you know, a great organization with a lot going on. Kathleen O'Brien had a tremendous reputation in the field. So there was a lot of really great and wonderful things that I knew about it, but, you know, you still have to sort of meet the organization and learn about it. So my first interview, I came out and I met with some of the board members and just was really inspired by sort of their vision for the organization. And, you know, how Tennessee was changing so much, especially Nashville, you know, and I know that's not easy on the people that live here, is to see such drastic change in their community. So, you know, my immediate thought was, can we as an arts organization be a positive part of that change? And how can we help the community navigate these sort of changes to its community? So I was already, my wheels were already spinning a lot after the first interview and getting to know the people involved with the organization and the team and the community. So I would say by the time that I was offered the role, I was very, very excited. I was enthusiastic and just ready to go.
And what's with, because you were at the Segerstrom Hall originally, right?
And Segerstrom Center for the Arts, yes.
What is with, so the theater there, the main theater, because I've looked up images of it, it is like the most backwards looking theater I've like ever seen. But does it make sense when you're in it? What,
with the tiers, you mean? Like the tiers?
Like there's like two tiers that are on opposite sides, right? Yes. Am I looking at the right? Does this make sense? This looks backwards, but does it make sense when you're in it?
It does. It does. It's actually a pretty great performance experience, you know, audience experience, because the tiers sort of maneuver to sort of bring you a lot, like bring these sections closer to the audience. So, you know, there was, it actually is a pretty good performance experience. You know, they had the continental seating, but then you were able, instead of just one balcony, you were essentially almost getting three that kind of put you a little bit closer than you would have if it was the traditional raked, with the
thought
three
out.
Balconies.
This wasn't a design flaw. It was. Somebody thought this out. Where do you think is the best seat in TPAC? I guess it is kind of the house seats. Are those the best seats in TPAC?
The orchestra. House seats change. Yeah, they change. I mean, it really depends. For dance, I love to sit probably about seven rows back in the center, just so I can sort of see straight ahead. Right. I usually like to sit in an aisle, except for dance. I'll take the center. But I like to sit in an aisle just because when I'm in my own space, sometimes like I just feel like I need to be ready to move at any point. When I was at Segerstrom, we actually had an earthquake happen.
Oh my God.
During Alvin Ailey and during Revelations. And I was sort of in the middle of the large, long row, and the building was swaying. And it was my first earthquake, and it was happening. The dancers danced through it, which was pretty incredible. But I saw my tech director kind of come out, and he stood sort of on the side near the pass door. So I was able to like make eye contact with him and know that everything was okay. But after that, I generally don't sit in the center unless it's dance. I sit in an aisle just so I can be ready at all times.
The aisle seat, that's always when my family goes to the theater, my mother always has to claim the aisle seat, but that's mostly so she can race to the bathroom at intermission. She always looks in the playbill what the last song is, and right before the show ends, she's already up and going. That's her thing. So, okay, wait. So you get the gig at TPAC, you come to TPAC, and then now you've got to figure out like, this is such an artistic community. How does this, center fit in to Nashville? How do I grow the community? Where do I find rye bread, which I know is a big concern of yours? How do you go about this? What's the process to sort of break into the community and to sort of establish, what is going to be my specific role? How am I going to contribute to this organization?
Well, I am really impressed that you remember the rye bread. That must have been some interview comment. And you did your
research. I've got a great research team.
But so my first, when I've traveled a lot, with my various roles in nonprofit. I've lived in DC, Chicago, Detroit, and California. So When I come to a new community, I mean, my first order of business is to learn the community and learn the organization. You can't possibly, come in with your ideas and just impose them on an organization that you haven't taken the time to really thoroughly know. Like you said, you got to do your research. So you do your research, and I spent a lot of time just having coffee with people and having discussions about what motivates you. What do you love about this community? Like, what's your thoughts about TPAC? How do you see TPAC, playing a role in Nashville and all of that? So it was a lot of just talk and discussions and getting to know people and getting to know like kind of what makes this city tick. And then really looking at our own organization, and I could identify what the opportunities were, but really then matching that, saying, okay, I see there's opportunity here, but is this the right place for it? Is this the right, does this feel right for this area? And I have to say, what's really been wonderful is we're in strategic planning right now. And I've been through a bunch of strategic planning processes, but I would say that this one specifically, the board and the staff and the community participants, the people that we've talked to, are all very much aligned on the direction of the organization. And that's a good feeling because it means that everybody's sort of recognizing the landscape and everybody's looking at what's best for the organization, but also how the organization can best serve Nashville.
Do you think, I always think that people think about the music industry in Nashville that's very inclusive and that, like I've lived in LA, for example, to do coffee meetings in LA, to get people to say yes, to actually have the meetings follow through because everything's so far apart, it's hard to get that to happen. To me, when I moved to Nashville, it felt 10 times easier to set up coffee meetings and meet with people and really have their full undivided attention. Do you experience this also, or, you know, or is the theater community a little different in that way?
No, I would say you are right on. Nashville has been an extremely warm, welcoming, friendly community. Very easy to get a meeting and just learn and listen. People are so just generous with their time and their advice and their thoughts on anything you could possibly think of. So I have found this to be extremely welcoming, this community to be extremely welcoming. Music industry, non-music industry, all of it. It's been great.
Wait, and then where do you get your rye bread from?
Now they have it at Publix, which is great. Or you can also get it at the Tower Deli in East Nashville.
The Tower Deli in East Nashville has the best rye bread. Okay. I'm going to go on a hunt for it. So, okay. So the season's announced as of today. Mm-hmm. Does the work begin now, or now do you get to take a step back and kind of breathe a minute?
Well, it's just, there is really no downtime in our business, especially in the pandemic, but now it's really, getting people subscribed, all of the people who trusted us with their money, which was wonderful. What basically last season, we gave people the option of you can get a refund, you can donate your tickets, or you can put it on account and then we can apply it towards a future season package. So we immediately said we're going to be very, very open to what people, with whatever people want to do. If they want a refund, we give them the refund right away. But a lot of people really kind of put their trust in us, which was amazing and wonderful, and said, keep my money on account. And then when you come back, we'll apply it towards the next season. So we're going through and processing all of that. So today's the first day of the renewals. And then it will be trying to get new subscribers. So trying to get new subscribers and then also just following up and going into the single ticket campaign, which is always exciting too, because there are sometimes when people just want to try you out a little bit. They don't necessarily want to make the full commitment, but we hopefully they will try us out and then maybe, step up to the full commitment next year.
That's always been me in the past. I always do the single tickets.
Yeah.
And I usually get them very last minute for TPAC. I usually go, oh my God, tonight I should go. That'll be way more fun than not going.
I do that too sometimes where you just, you want to see what it's like. You want to see what the experience is like and then and maybe you commit.
Maybe you commit. No pressure, but maybe. We no hope pressure. You do. What's the one thing, because I'm always like, sometimes I'll see a show at TPAC and then there's like a reception in the basement at there's like an education series. And then I learn about all these things that TPAC does. Is there anything that TPAC does that nobody knows about that like more people should know about?
Ooh, that's a good question. Let me see.
There is the education.
So we do. The education programs are fantastic. We've talked about Disney musicals in schools.
Which, how did that go this year? Did that still happen this year?
So Disney actually gave us permission to convert it to, we call it Adventure Storytime. And so we took basically a Disney musical and we created like a 30-minute program with a teaching artist, and you didn't have to be, in a school. So anyone could sign up for it. And you basically went through a small, like kind of little program about around that musical. So we did like Lion King and Jungle Book and Frozen, and people were signing up from all over the country. So that was kind of cool. I mean, the one thing about COVID and all of this converting to digital is that our reach has been incredible. I mean, we've got tens of thousands of students viewing some of these education programs that we've put out. We've got more people signing up for our classes, and you don't have to be here physically in Nashville. So it's been, that's been kind of the bright lining. But yeah, we also have this program called Wolf Trap Early Learning, where we teach art skills to three-year-olds. So we actually converted that to a Zoom class, and I was sitting on one the other day, and it was a woman, she's a puppeteer, and just the ability to capture these three-year-olds over Zoom, I'm like, you deserve 100 medals for the work you're doing right now. It's pretty amazing.
That is unbelievable. And what happens typically in the Andrew Johnson Hall, I think, or a theater? That's the smallest theater, right?
Johnson.
The Andrew Johnson Theater is the 250 seat, almost kind of black box feeling theater. I've never seen anything there. What happens in that room? I guess small things or.
Yeah, no, the Nashville Rep has a lot of their season in Johnson. I've seen some, you know, in my short time when we were able to do performances, they had this incredible production of a play called Pipeline, which was in there. That was fantastic. They did A Christmas Carol, Urinetown. So they do a lot of their season down in the Johnson. But I'm also really intrigued too of how we can use the Johnson moving forward in that black box. You know, I'm really looking at immersive theater programs and things that are not the traditional sit in a seat and watch something on a stage. So I'm really intrigued with looking at programming that we can bring that's a little bit more edgy and immersive.
We need to bring like the awesome 80s prom or Here Lies Love or something like that. I want to host a reading there. I don't know what I would host, but maybe I'll host, I don't know. Can I do that? Do I have the ability to do that?
Sure. That sounds fun.
I don't know what it would be, but maybe something. We'll figure it out. We'll find a reading of something.
We'll find a project.
Yeah. Something immersive. We'll figure it out. I'll think about it. What have we left out? What have we unsaid? The new season is on sale now. Everybody has to go and get their season tickets for TPAC because I think it's going to be an incredible season. What else have we left out? What else do we need to say?
Well, I would say stay tuned. You know, what we're looking at is sort of our rebuilding year, you know, getting our Broadway season out. We're putting together family programming. So we're going to be having a family series coming in the future, where we have programming specific for kids, not in schools, but just for families to buy tickets to and come to. We're also looking at a little bit more with the TPAC Presents, in the theatrical, maybe immersive theater. So we're looking at, I would say announcing much more than a Broadway season in the future. We'll be looking at a really full fleshed out theater season. We're also, you know, we have our strategic plan launching. We're in the midst of forming a lot of community partnerships and working on different collaborations. We also have a partnership with Friends Life Organization, which is a great organization, and they, you know, work with us on certain things on our end, and we work with them, and hopefully we'll be presenting some of their theater performances as well. So, you know, I think just keep an eye out for TPAC. We've got a lot of great plans ahead.
Keep an eye out for TPAC. In a normal year, how often do you make it to New York to see theater?
Well, a lot, because that's part of that selection process of what we're going to be, you know, presenting here. So, usually I'm there like once every 6 weeks. I mean, it's pretty frequent. And, you know, I think the last time I was there was January, like late January when, before COVID. So it's been a while. I'm looking forward to getting
back. Any shows up now that we want to bring to theater? I guess that would be six. Moulin Rouge, when that tours. Has there been a Moulin Rouge tour announcement? I'm trying to think what else is open right now.
Not a tour announcement, but it's, you know, it will tour. And that is a spectacle.
Unbelievable.
You don't even, I only saw it once, but you don't know where to look because there's so much going on around you.
I had sensory overload a little bit, especially in the beginning. Like, I was like freaking out, but I thought it was actually one of the best things I'd ever seen. I thought it was incredible.
Yes. I thought it was pretty amazing. And I'm looking for, I haven't had a chance to see six yet. And
I don't even really know what the premise is, but everybody's talking about six.
It was in Chicago. I think it was pre-Broadway in Chicago? I'm not sure.
So, yeah.
But what I'm really excited for is the West Side Story. Ah, I just missed that. That probably would have been the next thing that I saw.
That was the last thing I saw. It was either that or I saw the David Byrne show. American Utopia, which I think that actually might have been the last thing I saw. But I think West Side Story was the second to last thing I saw. And it was.
What did you think of American Utopia?
Okay, American Utopia I thought was incredible. And I'm a massive David Byrne fan. I was just so, so engaging. It was incredible. It was like the best concert I've ever seen. The West Side Story, off the record, maybe I'll cut this out. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was as powerful as it could have been. And almost because it was so big in a way, like the people were so big on the screen because you would see them, but then they were so big that I almost felt it almost took away the intimacy of it. I don't know. This is a hot take. I think a lot of people liked it. Most people like the West Side Story, I think.
I like it, I haven't seen it yet. So it will be interesting too for the people who were able to see things like in the early days and then have that long, long intermission. And then what they did to the show between the opening and the shutdown, that will be really interesting.
Yes. I'm very curious to see what it will be like. And I want to be back in New York. I'm from New York originally. I want to be back in a theater like opening night. Because I think the energy is going to be incredible.
I saw some incredible, one thing too is there's incredible theater, like plays going on right in New York. I mean, just really wonderful, wonderful stuff. And that's going to be, they're touring To Kill a Mockingbird, but it should be interesting to see if more of that stuff starts to tour. Traditionally, it hasn't. It's really stayed on Broadway, but I think there's more of an appetite for some of those touring plays. So that should be interesting.
To Kill a Mockingbird especially almost feels like a musical in terms of energy and how it is thrilling. The new version of it, the Aaron Sorkin version, is unbelievable. It would be amazing if it toured. It would be incredible.
Stay tuned,
because maybe I'll be coming to a TPAC season near you if you live in Tennessee. Jennifer, thank you for taking the time. This was so fun. I'm so excited that the season is up and live and will hopefully be getting into a theater very soon and can get back to the performing arts.
Thank you, Zach. This was fun.
Absolutely. Next time I'm at TPAC, I will let you know. Hopefully I will see you there. Do you go?
That
are you there
great.
Most every night, or how often are you there at the theater?
I'm there a lot. Not every night, but I'm there a lot.
Most of the time. You gotta be there. You gotta look over people, see what's going on. Do you have a ticket always on hold, or do you just hang in the back?
It depends. I mean, there are some times when I just come in just for just to be there sort of for like, I'll be there to say hi to someone coming into a show or whatnot. But, there are shows that I would watch over and over and over again. So it just depends.
Which are the ones? Hamilton, Les Mis, which recent productions would you see again and again?
Oh gosh. I mean, I only saw Hadestown once, but I'm just dying to see that again. The music is just haunting.
Everybody loves Hadestown.
Oh, it's good. Did you like it? What did you think?
What did I like Hadestown? I don't know. It wasn't my favorite. It has its moments. I think what they did with the lanterns and when the lanterns were swinging, amazing visual. I don't know. I think I was the problem with Hadestown. Maybe I was in a bad mood when I saw it. It wasn't my thing, but it won the Tony. So what do I know?
I love the music. I just thought the music was just really haunting, and it just kind of grabbed me. And it was one of those, I don't always listen to the cast recordings over and over later, But that was one that I kept going back to because it was interesting.
Jennifer, it's great to see you. Thank you for taking the time.
Great to see you.
And we'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Zach.
There you have it, episode 71 with Jennifer Turner on the podcast. Thanks for coming on, Jennifer. By the way, if you want to get tickets for the 21-22 season of TPAC, you can go to tpac.org and get more information about it there. Do not miss this season. I'm going to be there. Come say hi. Probably won't be there when I'm there, but I don't know, maybe. Also, you know, if you're on this theater kick and you're like, I want some more episodes that talk about theater, we had a great episode a little while back with Ken Davenport, legendary Broadway producer. And we also spoke with Kurt Deutsch, who was the head of theatrical at Warner. So really interesting episode also. We've got it all here on The Zach Kuhn Show. We've got everything for everyone. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to our newsletter at nashvillebriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. The Zach Kuhn Show is part of the American Songwriter Podcast Network. We're proud to be part of it. It's a great network. They do great work for us. Can't say enough good things. Okay, here we go. I'm out of here. Goodbye. We'll see you next week.